Hello, everybody, and welcome to Narrative. I'm Zev Shalev. Tonight, we're investigating Russia's recent presidential election, where Vladimir Putin claimed to have won an astonishing 87% of the vote. But the reality behind this landslide victory is far from democratic. That's coming up tonight on Narrative. So this is Democracy in Russia. You're seeing video of police forcefully dragging a voter out of the voting booth. What's really noticeable here is that the voters are allowed into the booths, but they must be kept open. There's actually a prohibition on closing the curtains behind voters. And there's always a law enforcement officer watching and a camera shooting everything you do inside the booth, and certainly who you're voting for. No credible opposition candidate was allowed to stand. Putin's main rival, of course, Alexei Navalny, died in a penal colony just last month in the weeks leading up to the election. And in a rare mention of his critic by name, Putin confirmed reports that he had explored exchanging Navalny for prisoners who were held in the West, but only on the condition that he never returned to Russia. That's right, in Putin's democracy, there can be no opposition leaders actually inside Russia. The international community has swiftly condemned the election as neither free nor fair. But the sham election is just one part of a larger picture of Vladimir Putin's war on democracy. Over here in the United States of America, in recent weeks, we've been exposing how Russia has been able to capture the House speakership, or at least the person who's currently in that position, Mike Johnson, who is almost certainly a Russian asset. Mike Johnson's Russian ties have left Ukraine in a precarious position as they are awaiting United States military aid, which is being blocked by the House Speaker. This can only be viewed as a strategic move by Putin to undermine American democracy and influence. But it doesn't even stop there. The Republican National Committee's recent appointment of Christina Bob as a former reporter from the fringe pro-Trump broadcaster One American News. She has a history of promoting conspiracy theories and working tirelessly to subvert the 2020 election. The RNC's new leadership, including Trump's daughter-in-law, Lara Trump, as co-chair, ally Michael Whatley as chair, and campaign advisor Chris LaCivita as chief of staff. This consolidation of power within the GOP is particularly alarming, given Trump's own ties to Russia. Just this week, he announced the return of Paul Manafort, a move that raises serious concerns about foreign influence in American politics. This is a prime example of how Russia has been able to infiltrate and manipulate the highest levels of the Republican Party, of the leading candidate for president, and indeed of the House speakership. Putin's influence extends far beyond the GOP as well, reaching into key social media platforms and media outlets. With Elon Musk at the helm of Twitter and Rupert Murdoch's Fox News consistently pushing pro-Russian narratives, Russian influence and control goes even further. Last week, we shared with you how over the years, the Russians have exploited anti-abortion and anti-LGBTQ sentiment to infiltrate evangelical churches. This strategic move has allowed Putin to tap into a powerful base of conservative voters and further polarize the American electorate. But perhaps the most alarming thing that could happen under a Trump presidency is the increased likelihood of a global conflict. We're far more likely to see a World War III. That's because Trump has already signaled that the United States under him will remain neutral in the face of Russia's European expansionism. So if Putin wants to attack Poland, Lithuania, or any other country in Eastern Europe, it's fine with Donald Trump. As we confront the reality of Putin's influence on American politics and society, it is crucial that we remain vigilant in exposing those connections and working to safeguard our democratic institutions. The stakes could not be higher, and the future of our nation hangs in the balance. To help us unpack these complex issues, we are joined tonight by Olga Lautman, a non-resident senior fellow at the Center for European Policy Analysis. Olga is the creator and co-host of the Kremlin File podcast. Oh, hey, it's Zev here. You know, I've been really craving those mouth-watering tacos from my favorite local spot up the street here, but dining out is tough to do. It's hard to find the time, the energy, and let's face it, the money to try and explore these new restaurants all the time. So that's where Cook Unity comes in. It's the first chef-to-you service that delivers locally sourced restaurant-quality meals right to your doorstep every week. Now, I recently tried Cook Unity myself and was blown away. I can still taste the grilled salmon with roasted vegetables that I had still now. The chicken parmesan was also really amazing, and both were absolutely delicious, as good as any meal I've had eating out. The best part, there's no cooking required. These meals are handcrafted by award-winning chefs using fresh, sustainable ingredients and delivered right to you. With Cook Unity, you can get chef-quality meals at home for a fraction of the cost of dining out. There are hundreds of dishes to choose from, with options for every dietary preference, from vegan, paleo, gluten-free, you name it, they have it. Meals stay fresh in the fridge for a week, and all the packaging is eco-friendly. Ready to elevate your experience? Ready to elevate your home dining experience, I should say? Go to cookunity.com. That's cookunity.com/. And this is the important part. Put this code in, R-E-A-C-H. That's cookunity.com/R-E-A-C-H. Reach at the checkout for 50% off for the first week. That's cookunity.com/reach, R-E-A-C-H. And you put the promo code, R-E-A-C-H, reach, for half off for the first week. Your taste buds will thank you. Trust me, I promise you, it's delicious. And Olga Lautman is with us tonight. Thanks for joining us.
I am good. It's a busy time.
I'm very thankful you're here tonight to share some of your insights, because there are so many. Let's start talking about the election in particular, the sham election. I don't even know why we call it an election, but that thing that Vladimir Putin put on for spectacle this last weekend, and really for the last few months, is over, and we have some sort of resolution. He is going to remain the president of Russia, very predictably. What did you think of where does this leave him in terms of the Russian people? Does he actually gain anything out of this election sham, or is it just a rubber stamp?
It was a theatrical performance. It does give insight that he doesn't feel confident because he had to elevate his, they call it, election win to what, 88%? 87%. He hasn't gone to others who have done 92%. Obviously, the whole thing was fabricated. This is the case in Russian elections for the past few decades. They're not elections, they are performances. Putin, when the 2000s decided to step aside because of the rules of the Constitution, which he later rewrote, and put in the prime minister / president, they kept playing positions. But frankly, Putin was the one in power. And this, honestly, it's a repeat of the Soviet Union. This is what happened in the Soviet Union. You were basically showed up to work on this so-called election day, bussed over to the polling station. You had no choice but to go and vote. You had the one candidate that you had to vote for. Putin did create a drop of a difference with illusion by offering a choice of candidates, but they're all candidates that are handpicked and approved by the Kremlin.
Yeah. So opposition to him, or anyone who was going to propose real opposition to him, was not allowed to run, or in Navalny's case, landed up dead. I mean, there wasn't really an opposition there at all. It was just vote for me or these other guys. I will disagree with a little bit. It's such a sham, and yet the West continues to call it an election, and it really isn't. It's just a rubber stamp process.
A circus.
Yeah, a circus. So you've got this guy, he pretends he's got a democracy. It's not really a democracy, but he's pretending it is. So instead of fixing his very broken democracy, because he's not really interested in doing that, he's now going to try and change the meaning of democracy everywhere in the world by installing yet again, or attempting to install yet again, another puppet in the United States. And Donald Trump now, with all our insights looking backwards, certainly was an asset during the White House to Russia. And even before that, we all knew he was going to be that. And he confirmed our worst suspicions. Now, it seems they're lining up the entire apparatus around Donald Trump to make what happened in 2016 and 2017 seem like child's play. Because you got Mike Johnson as the House Speaker, I believe, under the control of the Kremlin, looks to me like that, and there's a lot of evidence to suggest that's the case. You've got Christina Bob, who's clearly a Russian operative, who's now in charge of election integrity, of all things, at the GOP. And on top of that, you've got Paul Manafort now being rumored to return to the Trump campaign, which is also another Russian ass. They're doing this out in the open. And it's in a democracy, when you've got control over the executive and you've got control over the legislative, which is what you have when you've got the House Speaker, you have the whole thing. You have dictatorship that you're looking for. What are your thoughts about that strategy? Is that really what he's doing? Is that Putin's plan, is to really take over the United States? And is Americans as foolish to go for this as it seems they might?
I hope not.
Look, Russia's plan is to overthrow democracy. This, I don't even know what it is, banditism with genocidal aspect to it. I don't even, this regime is way more deadly than at least the one in the 80s. But yeah, they want to overturn democracy across the globe. This is what they have focused on. You see them running malign influence operations across the globe. You see them participating in deadly coups, particularly in Africa. We see what they did to keep Assad, which is another one of their puppets in Syria, in power by massacring close to 500,000, anywhere between 500,000 to 750,000 Syrians. So this is the plan. They want every democratic country to be, democracy to be destroyed and to turn, and they want to have the power in the world. They want to be the superpower. As far as with 2016, they picked Trump. It was very clear, I mean, that they wanted to get Trump into power. They succeeded. They ran a multifaceted operations against us, everywhere from disinformation hacking to pretty much the Cambridge Analytica operation. Everything that you could think of, they pulled out of their playbook. They were priming it since 2008. In 2008, after Barack Obama was elected, this is when they saw that there were divisions forming in U.S., particularly around rates, something, again, from the KGB playbook. And they decided that they were going to, this is the perfect opportunity to get in and to cause major divisions. So you see what happened in 2016 and how many people became loyal to Trump within that year that he was campaigning, his supporters, but they were already primed for it. They were indoctrinated for at least the past decade from social media. This time it's going to be 10 times worse because right now, Putin's only choice is to have Trump back in the White House. That is his only choice because he is losing the war, his genocidal war in Ukraine. U.S. is continuing, even though right now we're stalled, but we have been very key in providing support for Ukraine. We've been key in building the coalition around Ukraine. And in order for Putin to get Ukraine, he needs Biden out of the White House. So we are going to see what will happen this year. It's going to make, like you said, 2016 child's play. And we will be have it coming from several directions. I've been warning and been seeing signs that Hungary may be used as a cutout. And interestingly enough, you just saw Orban come to the White House, not to the White House, to Mar-a-Lago. Yeah. And we really, America needs to be prepared. Everybody needs to vote and make sure that Trump never, ever sees this White House because he really is the biggest danger America has ever faced in its history.
It really is amazing that we are finding ourselves at this moment where we are going to rely on just this election and maybe the military. Those are the last two things standing that can maybe save America. The justice system has really failed America. It's infuriating, but it's also... People do, as you point out, people really need to start understanding how serious this is. And they also need to understand that Trump is not some savior. And certainly Russia are not any friends of America. And that what they're doing this year with the amount of operatives in place that they're putting in place and clearly a disinformation campaign, which is they're very good at. You and I both know how good they are at dismantling and building narratives that are completely untrue. We've seen it with Hunter Biden, which got all the way to the GOP in committee. These are things that are created out of Russian disinformation operations in Moscow and then fed to these people. And they've blindly taken to Congress. And it says,
and I just want to correct you on one thing. With the Hunter Biden, what makes it even more dangerous is the fact this wasn't fed to Giuliani, who was the main person. Giuliani actually went to Ukraine to seek out and help study Russian intelligence to craft this. This is what makes it even more dangerous, because you have Americans surrounding Trump who are going, approaching Russian intelligence and saying, hey, we need to win this election. What do you got? How can you help us? Right. And I watched the whole thing happen when Giuliani started showing up in Ukraine, speaking with Dyrkach and Telegenko and the rest of the Russian intelligence agents. And that's what makes it like so much more dangerous, when it's Americans approaching a foreign adversary who wants to destroy us in order for their own personal gain.
So you believe that Giuliani was made the approach to them and they weren't making the approach to him?
Absolutely. He's the one who flew to Ukraine. He's the one who tried to get connected to Dyrkach. He is the one everyone knew in Ukraine who Dyrkach is. Work with our collaborators of Russian intelligence, and that they're also work with mafia. And this goes to the now deceased father. So he is the one who pressured Dirk, asked him for help to pressure to open a criminal case in Ukraine. And they actually went as far as opening a criminal case with this corrupt judge. Luckily, it moved nowhere. They took the steps, which is even more dangerous than if you're sitting in the Trump campaign, run out for coffee, and some Russian intelligence operative approaches you in the deli. He's like, hey, I can help you with something. That makes me even more. And I follow this operation from start to finish, from the first time Giuliani showed his face in 2017, then in 2018, 19, and then 20. Well, he even flew to Ukraine on private plane and then used one of the oligarchs, on public plane, and used one of the oligarchs' private plane to fly to Vienna to see her. He is the one who was very willing and at the direction of Trump. Because again, these are all Trump's friends for the past few decades that he's been dealing with Russia.
Yeah, the truth is, though, they're all sort of Russian assets. So it's hard to tell who's really initiating what when you've got Russian assets in the White House and Russian assets in the mayor's office in New York. And maybe who knows how they initiated that conversation under whose orders, because they all seem to be part of the same, as you point out, a mafia and intelligence operation. And that's really at the core of all of this. And I wondered if you could spend a couple of minutes just telling us a little bit more about that. That what we really are seeing when we talk about Donald Trump and we talk about this influence campaign and the Mike Johnsons and all these is the intersection of mafia and intelligence in the worst form, in the very, very worst form. Tell us a little bit about how that happened, but then also what that looks like to us in the West.
Okay, a lot of people, when they think mafia, they are familiar with Italian mafia, who, yes, maybe they paid off prosecutors and law enforcement, but it was for their own means to get containers of contraband through for their own bottom line. With Russia, because there is no line between the Kremlin intelligence services and organized crime, they all operate together. In a case where a Russian mafia figure approaches and starts doing with business with a Western individual, that information will be fed back to Russian intelligence services, and automatically you have compromise. When I first started looking at Trump, his dealings to Russian mafia go back to the 1980s. And when I first started looking, I'm like, they definitely have 4 decades of compromise on him. But then the more I have watched Trump fall into this role, I just genuinely believe that he likes that system. It's like he doesn't like democracy. He likes that power, the power of being a strong man who, if someone's investigating you, you tell your guys around you, hey, take care of it, shut it down. It doesn't matter if they're killed, murdered, jailed, whichever way it's shut down, as long as it's shut down. And that's the key difference with Russian mafia. When you do dealings with Russian mafia, you are doing dealings with Russian intelligence, or Russian intelligence is collecting information. The reason it is like this is because in order for Russian mafia to operate in Russia, they have to give kickbacks to Russian intelligence services. And in exchange, they also have to perform services for them. Same thing with the oligarchs. People don't understand why some people go after oligarchs and businessmen in Russia with, who are like heads of banks and various industries, because they are there because the Kremlin put them there. And the minute the Kremlin gives them orders, your job is to move money to fund this operation, or maybe they won't even tell them, but your job is to move and fund an operation, get this money from here to America in order to interfere in the same thing with co-opting people, because you have Russian mafia who co-opted Trump through his real estate, money laundering, and more criminal activities. And then you have the oligarchs who use their yacht to invite politicians, former defense ministers, and other government officials, and people in within the country that has influence to influence foreign policy.
So to understand what this would look like in America, where you have, to some extent, at least, a meritocracy, where you can actually climb up the ranks and start your own company and become the CEO of a big corporation, maybe you still have that freedom. The Russian system does not really embrace capitalism. The Russian system is just based on basically running things like a mob family. You get, or a king, you'd be granted certain powers, authorities, or assets to carry out things only in so long as you support the king. The minute you don't support the king, you're out and your assets go to somebody else, which is very different than the American system where you earn what you earn, but you get to keep it most times. And that's capitalism. So what the Republicans are really supporting is an anti-capitalism in America, which is astonishing.
And when you're out in Russia, because you're granted, you know, these positions, and you might even not know when you cross the line and piss somebody off, it could be for any number of reasons. When you're out means you're jailed or you are out a window. It's not that, oh, sorry, can you sign this resignation and have a nice life? No, this is, you're thrown out a window or killed, or you are jailed for some fictitious case that they find from 1990s that they decide they found new evidence. Yeah. And that's it's just how Russia operates, seemingly enough, with Putin being more squeezed, with the system crushing him because he's not doing well in Ukraine. You see him taking more rein in, and you see literally more and more people being murdered or jailed. And it's gotten so egregious to the point you see every day I see somebody who's at a meeting and security services walks in, grabs him out, puts him under arrest, drags him out, and they're doing it publicly. I don't think that guy did anything. He's part of the system. But the point is that no one, he wouldn't understand why that decision was made, that suddenly he had to be removed. And this is becoming very, like a very common thing, like beyond common now.
So if people understand what Russian democracy looks like, that's what it looks like. It looks like no real meritocracy, no opportunity to gain your own careers and to build your own fortune, and then no opposition in any way. You can't really speak out against Putin. And if you do, even if you go and do a funeral, like we saw with Navalny, that becomes an issue. There is, people can get arrested for going to see a funeral, to go to a funeral. So there's so much there that I don't think Americans realize, certainly red state Americans do not realize what supporting Russia and supporting Trump really means. It means an end to everything that we know of as American, and not only our freedom of our bodies and all of that, which is in some cases why many of them vote because they don't like abortion or whatever, but it means everything changes. You can't be yourself. You don't have individual freedom. You don't have individual control over your futures, your businesses, your livelihoods, your families, and anything could happen to you at any time if you cross the line. It's a system built on ultimate fear.
That's exactly it. And it's fear and hatred. And you saw from 2016 when Trump came down the escalator that he specifically tapped into the darkest of America, the darkest emotion, the darkest hatred, the darkest fears in order to divide the country. And this is what dictators do. They want to divide the country. They want to divide families. And you mentioned Paul Manafort. Paul Manafort showed up in Ukraine under the direction of Russia's security services because he's been working with Russia's intelligence services and oligarchs for over two decades now. Yeah. He showed up in Ukraine in 2003. And it was a little bit before the Orange Revolution. This is why I was so shocked to see what was happening here. during the first few years, you suddenly had this hatred and anger and people fighting with each other. And no one could understand what was happening. Like, why is suddenly everybody so angry? Why is everyone so divided? And it came out to be that Paul Manafort, with Russia's intelligence services and other operatives, Kalimnik, that he was working with very closely, who he plucked out from Moscow, that they were carrying out operations of division. And the whole thing is to divide family, to cause paranoia, to stoke hatred and fear. And this is exactly what happened in 2015. And now, if you look at the country, you don't recognize it. 2015 January does not look like 2015 now, with people who can't even come together for a simple thing. I dread to think if a foreign enemy dropped a bomb on New York, and you would have the South, what, celebrating? Oh, yay, some New Yorkers, libtards are dead. And this is not how it is, because the weaker we are internally, which is Russians, and it's not only Russia. China has picked up on this. China's running their operations. Iran is running their operations in U.S. The weaker and more divided we are here, the weaker we are on the global stage, and the easier we are to overthrow as a country and as a democracy. And I don't think people realize the danger. It's not just about, oh, stop attacking my candidate. This goes far worse than that. If your candidate was uniting everyone and people and trying to show opportunities for everyone, that's a different story. But even today, now he's again, touching on religion. And if you are Democrat, if you vote Democrat and are a Jew, then you are a traitor basically to your religion and to Israel, which is another anti-Semitic trope. He has targeted everything that brings us together, including sports. Sports is the thing that you're not even supposed to talk about politics. And I remember for a few years, like, he turned sports into a political thing where people were fighting with each other.
It's remarkable. The effect of the disinformation campaigns to polarize America has been remarkable. It has been so pernicious, set us on a path where the entire future of humanity really is at stake. We're not talking about just one American presidency, about one election. We're talking about the people of the world who rely on America to be that beacon on the hill, even if it isn't always that. And we're taking that hope away from them if we elected Donald Trump. And I don't think the resonance of how important that has landed. And I'm so glad that you're helping people understand how deeply significant it is that someone like Putin can have control over the entire American agenda. Because what happens if Donald Trump is in the White House next year? And what happens is then he gives NATO the boot, or whatever reason he gave the other day about allowing Russia to do whatever they wanted to in Eastern Europe. If he gives them that green light and basically stays impartial in that conflict, then we'll be in World War III. We will see Russia attack the Eastern European countries that used to be part of their Soviet Union. And there's no doubt about that. That is exactly what Trump has promised. It's what Viktor Orban has promised. And it's basically what Putin has promised. So they're not hiding any of these intentions. They will launch World War III if Donald Trump is elected president.
100%. They will definitely. I mean, look, Russia has never, you know, made it a secret that, you know, they want Ukraine, they want Moldova, they want Kazakhstan, they want the Baltic. They don't make it a secret. They've always said, we are bringing these countries back. Granted, it's been 30 plus years, and that's it. And people here try to explain it away and whatnot, but this is what they want. They have military plans for this for decades. The plan to launch a full-scale invasion against Ukraine. First of all, Russia invaded Ukraine in 2014. That plan, military plan, was leaked in 2008 by accident. And that had everything we see in 2014. They attempted in 2014 and were successful with illegally annexing Crimea, occupying Donbass. But they attempted to take Odessa. They attempted to take Kharkiv, and their plan was to go forward. They were stopped at that time. And now they launched the full-scale invasion. And I think it's even worse. I think you would assist Russia in making sure Ukraine falls, because Trump, Ukraine is full of resources. You had Lindsey Graham, who's salivating about Ukraine's resources yesterday on Twitter or X or whatever that platform is called, saying, oh, they have oil and gas and this and that. They might want to go in and have a bargain, like, here, we'll split the resources up.
Absolutely. I get exactly what the GOP has been wanting to do all along. So, yeah, makes sense.
If Ukraine falls, you will see Moldova, you will see Baltics, you will see Europe go into full war.
It looked like they're about to sign a cooperation agreement with the Kremlin, which looked to me like they're about to launch into Kosovo again. It's over and over again. And yes, wars make money for some of these people, but they don't care about democracy and they don't care about human rights and they don't certainly care about the human lives that are going to be lost. And one of them is the United States, whether you like them or not. That's exactly what they stand for. And to watch Putin manipulate Mike Johnson in the way he's done to manipulate the people's representatives in that house is shocking. People should be outraged at the fact that a foreign dictator like Vladimir Putin, who's not even duly elected by anybody, who's basically just appointed himself the dictator of Russia, is in charge of figuring out whether we could pass legislation in the United States through this Mike Johnson guy. It is not. It should be a major issue. It scares me that it's not a major issue. And it certainly indicates how much the GOP has become Putin's party and how seriously it has to be crushed in order for us to continue as a democracy.
Yeah, no, it's infuriating. It's mind-blowing that Russia can sit and dictate U.S. policy from the Kremlin. If you pull back, I remember the first time Trump in 18 or 16 offered praise for Putin and tried to whitewash that he's a murderer. You had Republicans come out in full force and, oh my God, we disavow that and whatever. If you take a snapshot from 2016, where you had Republicans who were speaking out, who were condemning statements, compared to now, Trump has managed to capture the whole party. That Republican Party is finished. Whatever was in 2016, they either retired, ran, or shut up from fear, the death threat, fear of death threats, fear of losing power, whatever it is. And the fact that Russia can sit and control our foreign policy and our domestic policy from the Kremlin. And this is a wanted war criminal. Putin is a wanted war criminal. There is an arrest warrant for him for kidnapping tens of thousands of Ukrainian children to take into Russia to erase their Ukrainian heritage and turn them into Russia. And their parents, there are some of them still have parents inside of Ukraine who every single day are looking to find their children. And plus, he has a lot more war crimes coming down because we see every Russia strategically targets an apartment building where people are sleeping in the middle of the night, normal families. And Russia, as part of their terrorist acts, hits civilian targets. And this is who Mike Johnson is assisting, a wanted war criminal who has an arrest warrant out and who is very clearly has stated that he will commit genocide, he is committing genocide, and that he will cleanse Ukraine from Ukrainians. Whoa. What kind of Speaker of the House is that?
Absolutely. It's not a very traditional speaker. It's a speaker who's been captured. And the more we realize that by being captured, the American votes that went into the last election have been nullified, basically, because no one voted for Mike Johnson to be the Russian figurehead in charge of the House. That's not what anyone voted for when they voted for the elections in the last round. And it's certainly not what people want to vote for this time. And I think it has to be made really clear that a vote for the GOP is basically voting for Vladimir Putin to be in charge of all our legislation going forward. And that's a significant amount of what a democracy is all about. So you take away the ability to write laws, you take away the ability to execute laws if you have Donald Trump in the White House, and you've got a dictatorship run almost as a colony. It's like a colonization of America that Vladimir Putin will have achieved if Donald Trump and Mike Johnson are back in their offices in 2024,
2025. Yeah, no, and they're achieving now because Ukrainian aid was supposed to be passed in October. We are in March. The Ukrainians are running out of ammo, rationing ammo on the front lines, sacrificing their own lives to keep Russia from making Ukraine fall and therefore overthrowing a democratic country and then marching forward through Europe and you have Trump, who is a candidate. He is a candidate. How in the hell is he allowed to dictate foreign policy and have control of foreign policy for the Kremlin when he is a candidate? When you have a sitting U.S. president, you have a secretary of state. Yesterday, I read, I think they get more and more infuriated that Lindsey Graham spoke with Zelensky and told him, said, oh, Trump is offering no interest loan. Yeah. Who is Lindsey Graham to go and offer Zelensky any kind of a loan, any kind of a suggestions of what Trump is offering when we have a Secretary of State, we have the State Department, we have the White House, we have a president and a vice president and a National Security Council. So you are seeing them flaunt these democratic institutions and norms in order to go and do some kind of backroom deals. Look, there's not much difference between Russia and the Soviet Union, but there was a chance in the early 90s for Russia to take a different course. And basically, what was happening in the early 90s is what we're seeing here happening through the Republican Party. These backroom deals. Who is Lindsey Graham to go against a sitting U.S. president, sitting U.S. Secretary of State, and other cabinet members to propose Trump's deal?
There used to be a rule that you weren't allowed to do that. That if you're in an election campaign, even if you're not in an election campaign, foreign policy is run by the foreign policy people. They're not run by armchair foreign policy experts from the Senate. It's fine for them to opine, but certainly not for them to take any active involvement in, especially someone who's compromising as Lindsey Graham.
And let me ask you a question. So Lindsey Graham went to see Zelensky. Now, we know Ukrainians are desperate for ammunition, for weapons, for aid. How do we know that Lindsey Graham didn't propose another perfect phone call type conversation and tell Zelensky, listen, you open up a criminal investigation against Joe Biden, the sitting president and his cabinet members, and we will make sure to pass your weapons package in Congress, a candidate.
Yeah, it's ridiculous that that's even happening. It's beyond belief that we're even sitting in that position where a former president is trying to call the shots. It's like, when does that ever happen? It just never happened before. Olga, it's so enlightening talking to you because you share a lot of my frustration with the system right now. And I don't think a lot of people are feeling as frustrated. I think there's still a lot of people who think of Donald Trump as a decent possibility for the presidency. And he is anything but that. He had an awful presidency. He oversaw coronavirus. He tanked the economy. He spent more money than anybody else combined in terms of the debt. And here we are having to entertain the possibility that he's going to be around again, breaking all our alliances of the world again, entering into world wars, into conflicts, into situations which are just going to be destructive for America. So I hope maybe one or two people gets to be convinced by watching tonight's show, or if I can get any MAGA supporters through the Twitter algorithm these days. But I hope that your message and your message is so clear and so you're so passionate about keeps coming through. And everyone should check out your podcast. Tell everyone about The Kremlin File.
Yeah, so we have The Kremlin File podcast. And basically, I launched this podcast with my co-host, Monique Kamara, because frankly, I could not believe the way U.S. media discussed Russia's attack on the 2016 election. They framed it as a Republican versus Democrat thing. And depending on which echo chamber you're in, this is what you know. So either Russia did attack us or Russia didn't attack us. So I basically launched this podcast to show, listen, Americans, you are not special. That we are the 37th country that Russia has attacked. That they use the same exact tactics, whether it's hacking of elections, manipulating emails and timed release of emails, disinformation operations, weaponizing in some countries, Russian migrants to come out and have violent protests in order to try to destabilize the government.
I had no idea there was 37 countries.
Yep, absolutely. Every single country in U.S. in one way or another, in Europe, one way or another was attacked by Russia. Then you have all the countries across Africa. Then you have Russia interfering in Middle Eastern affairs. Russia literally ran operations in Madagascar. Most people don't even know that it's the country, think it's a movie. And Russia ran operations there, and they used the same tactics. They used the same playbook. So my hope was to break out of this political line of discussion on Russia's attacks into a geopolitical, so people can understand that whether you were Macron sitting in France for your election in, I believe it was 2017, his emails were hacked. His emails were disseminated. They were sending money to the far-right candidate Le Pen, just like here, who was supporting Trump. And they do this in every single country. So that was the purpose. And it also goes back to the collapse of the Soviet Union and showing the comparisons between KGB, the current security services, which are pretty much KGB, and how they operate.
It's an interesting podcast. Everyone should check it out. And I think your points there are very important, that people need to keep crystallizing their head that this is it's not really just the GOP versus the Democratic Party here. It's Russia versus the Democratic Party, maybe some other countries too. But ultimately, it's a very different landscape than a typical election landscape. And the media does itself a disservice by not focusing on Russian efforts. And of course, they've been told to do that, but it certainly makes a difference that they don't do it. So thanks very much for joining us tonight, Olga. I really appreciate it. I hope you'll enjoy
it. Thank you.
Is there anything else you want to talk about before we say goodbye?
The only thing I can say is that as dark and difficult as things look and as polarized as we look, people still have a chance to stop the fall of our democracy. All you have to do is vote. Make sure you help your neighbors vote, or your family and friends make sure they vote if they need help getting to the voting polls, because we still have, if Trump gets back into power, they keep talking about 28. There will be no 2028. You cannot have a dictator and have an election in 4 years like a democracy.
Go ahead, sorry.
No, that's the one point that I want to make, that we have a chance to stop this. We can have disagreements over various issues, domestic issues and whatnot, but we have a chance to prevent the country from sliding into the hands of an authoritarian.
Absolutely. And with it, the future of all of humanity. So this is a really crucial election. Everyone needs to vote, especially in swing states, in red states. If you can convince a swing state voter to vote in a Democratic direction versus the GOP, you're winning a lot by being able to do that. If you have any family or friends or members of your community living in that part of the world, take a road trip by the time November comes and try to convince them. Olga Lautman, thank you so much for being on the show tonight. And we'll look forward to having you again on Narrative.
Thank you.
Oh, hey, it's Zev here. You know, I've been really craving those mouth-watering tacos from my favorite local spot up the street here, but dining out is tough to do. It's hard to find the time, the energy, and let's face it, the money to try and explore all these new restaurants all the time. So that's where Cook Unity comes in. It's the first chef-to-you service that delivers locally sourced restaurant-quality meals right to your doorstep every week. Now, I recently tried Cook Unity myself and was blown away. I can still taste the grilled salmon with roasted vegetables that I had still now. The chicken parmesan was also really amazing, and both were absolutely delicious, as good as any meal I've had eating out. The best part, there's no cooking required. These meals are handcrafted by award-winning chefs using fresh, sustainable ingredients and delivered right to you. With Cook Unity, you can get chef-quality meals at home for a fraction of the cost of dining out. There are hundreds of dishes to choose from, with options for every dietary preference, from vegan, paleo, gluten-free, you name it, they have it. Meals stay fresh in the fridge for a week, and all the packaging is eco-friendly. Ready to elevate your experience? Ready to elevate your home dining experience, I should say? Go to cookunity.com. That's cookunity.com/, and this is the important part, put this code in, R-E-A-C-H. That's cookunity.com/, R-E-A-C-H, reach. At the checkout for 50% off for the first week. That's cookunity.com/ reach, R-E-A-C-H. And you put the promo code R-E-A-C-H reach for half off for the first week. Your taste buds will thank you. Trust me. I promise you it's delicious.
One day you'll tell the story of autocrats, crooks, and kings who came for our freedom. A story of citizens who stood up to tyranny and won. The people prevailed and renewed an old vow to a more perfect union. And that was just the beginning. The story continues. Narrative, where truth lives.